Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Today, I'm talking to theater educator extraordinaire, Gay Jones. Gay decided in the fifth grade that she wanted to be a theater educator, and she has been impacting teachers and students for over 40 years. She may be retired, but she is not slowing down. Gay's on the board for the Educational Theater Association. She travels on average to 20 states a year, adjudicating, teaching workshops, fundraising for student scholarships. Let's get right to this interview. So just a bit of a heads up, there's a little bit of a hum and a couple of phone rings, but we can handle all that, right? And make sure you keep listening because Gay is going to reveal her top tips for theater teachers, and they're really valuable, and I think they're ones you won't expect. And she also has some specific tips on how you can be an advocate for your arts program. Okay, here's Gay. Hello, everybody. Well, I am tickled pink today. I'm really jazzed for the conversation that I am about to have. I have here on the podcast, I think, a theater educator extraordinaire, Gay Jones. I've only been doing workshops and festivals for a relatively short time, but I have always known about the impact that Gay has on both teachers and students. Hello, Gay.
Thank you. I love it. Hello, everyone. I so appreciate opportunity.
Yeah, it's awesome. Now, you've been extremely busy recently. You've been doing some fundraising, actually. What has that all been about?
You know, with Thespians, Jason Daunter, who is the stage manager on the first production, national production tour of Wicked, and Matt Conover, who's vice president of Disney. He's in charge of casting on both coasts and cruise ships, etc. We came up with an idea that said, how about we do a little benefit while we're all in California at the same time, which is like a year and a half ago, and raise money for Thespian Scholarship.
This is just for some folks who might not know, but Thespians is an educational theater organization. It's the umbrella company is the Educational Theater Association. And Thespians are high school and middle school theater troops, basically, yes?
And yes, they are. And it's an honor society. So the kids have to accumulate a certain amount of hours to be initiated. And then there's also academic thespians. So after they become that, and if they got really good grades, then they've got other benefits. So Educational Theater Association is the umbrella organization over thespians. We have something like 47,000 thespians and over 8,000 adult members who belong to EDTA, Educational Theater Association. Jason, Matt, and I happen to serve on the board, and we're very lucky to do that. We have a three-year term, each one of us overlapping. They were all in California at the same time, and I said, come on to Ojai, because I live in Ojai, California. And I said, we'll put on a benefit. And I said, I happen to have some girls that I work with in musical theater, and Jason all of a sudden said, let's put on a show.
So all those theater people, you know, give them an inch, and they're putting on a show.
So we found a wonderful benefactor in the name of Joan Kemper, who lives in Ojai, and she's a philanthropist and loves theater. She actually got her lighting degree in Chicago as a youngster, but she got the free venue, she got the free kind of piano tuning. Anyway, so we got music. Jason Daunter solicited Jason Yarko, who was musical conductor of Wicked. He wrote some music. He sent the music to our kids. Our kids got a local vocal director who helped them learn. And then Jason said, well, I can bring a couple of Wicked cast members with me. And so he did. So they're being able to, within one afternoon, they are able to play with Jason Yarko, who is the musical conductor of Wicked, and learn some music. But these high school kids get to sing along with Carla Stickler, who is now playing Elphaba on Broadway, and Michael Mahaney, who is understudying Ophira. And they got to sing and dance and put on a show. Well, by the end of the evening, because we decided, well, we would do it really cheaply. We wanted to only charge $10 to $15. Well, we raised over $1,000 just in one night.
Wow.
So we thought, well, this is all going to go to Thespian Scholarship to help those kids who want to go to college and major in theater. So we decided, Jason said, well, just follow Wicked. So we decided to follow Wicked. We brought EDTA on board, and they came up with a marketing and publicity. And therefore, Kristen McFadden joined us, who is Director of Development with Educational Theater Association. So now we've done 19 cities around the country, including Hawaii, and we have done shows, and we've raised over $45,000, plus another $250,000 in in-kind donations.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we feel so good about that. So that's one of the projects that I'm working on.
That's really awesome. How long would you say you've been involved with Drama and Education?
Oh, I started the first time I started something was when I was in fifth grade, and I got to take elocution lessons, which the older people will know what that is. But I got to stand on Mrs. A.B. Morgan's Persian rug in Chickasha, Oklahoma. And every week I recited poetry or did monologues, and she gave me adjustments. Now, I didn't know what that was at the time, but I thought this is really cool. And my mother was ahead of her time, and she let me do this. And so I took it all the way through high school, and I decided in fifth grade that I wanted to be a theater educator. So I became one. College, went to a very specialized, very small women's college in Oklahoma, in which we had to do everything. We did the lighting when the Oklahoma City Symphony came through. We did the set crew. We did everything. And we also got to play some male roles, only in the Shakespeare, or in the called public domain kind of things. Otherwise, we recruited the officers from a nearby military base, but we only recruited officers. Okay.
Right. And well, you have to have standards, right?
I know, we do. We did. It was a very specialized degree. It was a BA in speech and drama. So then I came to California, and I started teaching eighth grade speech and drama and English. And I was the first woman to get a master's degree in theater from Cal State University Fullerton. Moved on to El Dorado High School, in which I was a one-person show for 38 years. When I retired, they so kindly named the theater after me. It's called the Gay Jones Theater. It's a little black box theater. That's where I spent all my life. And I said, oh, I just donated like a lot of time of my life. I didn't donate any money, except I probably really did throughout the year. But now there's a Gay Jones Theater in Placentia, California. So I'm very happy about that. So after retirement, I'm now more flexible that I can teach at Santa Barbara City College. Actually, it's the Center for Continuing Lifelong Learning, which I have ages like 17 through my oldest student is 92 years old. Mary, who is my neighbor, just wanted to try to be an actor, so she's coming on over. And then I also teach at Cal State University East Bay, in which I set up a professional development institutes for teachers, for theater teachers around the nation. So that's where I am. So that's how long.
What is it about teaching that clicks for you? Like, why be a drama teacher?
You know, I'm going to say I'm teaching part-time only two days a week at Ventura Charter School, and I'm teaching little fifth and sixth graders and also one seventh and eighth grade class. And the fifth and sixth graders are just so engaged and wonderful. But you know what? I'm going to say middle school theater teachers, I think, are terrific. I think I so honor them because sometimes eighth grade girls have a lot of drama in their lives.
And it's a very particular age.
It is. And so anytime, I think out of the whole semester, I think they're probably about three times out of all those days that I've been there, like only Monday and Friday, that they were so truly engaged that they forgot about peer pressure. And I thought, you know, this is why we do this. I had a theater professor in college that said, when you strike 12, everything fits and everybody knows it. And even with those little eighth grade girls who, like I said, potentially have a lot of angst going on and peer and want to be accepted by everybody, that there are moments that this theater art that we have, it takes them outside of that and gets them to a place in which they feel creative. So I think that's why.
Now, you said that you, when you were teaching, you were a one-man band. And we have so many of our listeners who are in the same boat. A lot of them feel like overwhelmed and sometimes a little bit alone. So how did you deal with being just the one who had to do it all?
What a great question. First of all, I engaged my students and I empowered them. And it took a while. I started in the first year, I had like one speech and drama class and maybe one theater class. And then over about 4 years, then I had five. And it just progressed from that point. But I think the empowerment that I let students have a place to succeed, but also could experiment in a safe environment. And to the point that thespians were really important to us because it's an honor society. And what happens was that I often would engage the students as student leaders. So I would have a staff meeting every week with the student leaders who was in charge of costumes or in charge of props and set them up for success because I would give them expectations and also give them a way to help them. But literally, if some costume person didn't come through, which happened, we all picked it up, but we did Romeo and Juliet in jeans and t-shirts simply because the one person just couldn't make it. And we thought, well, we're still going to do it, but it's the idea of responsibility and empowerment. That, and I also hired a lot of college students and a lot of former students who would come back and choreograph. And even I turned over directing a show. I did 5 shows a year plus 10 festivals a semester, each semester, and then did the touring shows at the elementary school. But I would always do them during class period, so it was part of the curriculum. They got on the bus. We went over to the elementary school, did Dr. Seuss stories, got on the bus, and got back before my class period was finished. So I empowered them, but I also, like I said, I hired a former student to come and choreograph, and she gradually took over directing the musical. And so I embraced a lot of help from other faculty members and students.
I love that. I love the whole notion of just empowering students. It's like if you don't have other drama teachers around you, you sort of, I like how you said that you had a staff meeting with your student
right.
leaders. You know, why not?
Right.
Yeah. I know you because of the workshop work that you do. How many festivals do you think you travel to in a year to teach workshops?
I probably travel to between adjudicating for the main stage at the International Thespian Festival at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, plus doing workshops, plus doing Making Magic Defying Gravity. I probably go to maybe 20 states throughout the year, and I feel very honored because every time I go, I meet wonderful people, but I also get to learn from them. Because I came back, like I said, from the Northeast Conference, where they did a very small, it's New England states, very small conference in 400. And then I went from there. I learned so much there, and then I went to Texas, which happens to have like something like 3,000 or 4,000, I think that's right. And then I stopped in Arizona, which I think, Lindsay, you were there at least. Or
yeah,
Craig,
you know what? I think I saw you like across the room. It was one of yes. Sorry. Hello. Bye.
Hello. We have another, 1,200 or so. But every place I go, there is something that I learn. And then I volunteered to be on the California State Thespian Board because I was the past chapter director. And I serve as membership vice president for that. And also California Educational Theater Association. I volunteered to be membership for that. And DTASC, which is Drama Teachers Association of Southern California, I volunteered to be vice president of advocacy. But I'm the linking person with 1,000 theater educators in the state of California because every time I go somewhere, I learn something that can help California, that can help teachers around the nation, that can help anybody or student that I go into a workshop. So I have several different workshops. One is my big push is ensemble building. And
I was going to ask you about that because when I was looking at your workshops, that seems to be the thing that you really hit home. And why is that important?
Well, I think probably because of the supportive, collaborative nature, the whole 21st century skills, which we were doing way before they named it 21st century skills, with the collaboration and the creativity and the critical thinking and the communication. It's all about that. And so with that emphasis now, I really approach it that way. That not only in class do I set everything up as a collaboration, but also on thespians, I set everything up with the students and as teachers as well. We're all in this collaborative nature. And that's particularly, I so encourage theater teachers to get involved in their local and their state and their national educational theater association because you find out you're not by yourself. And particularly with Educational Theater Association, with their web-based community, which is going to roll out in February of 2014, you can go on and post something and you'll get an answer instantaneously. Once again, it's my theory of ensemble. We're all in this together. So any way we can share, I don't consider it as competitive. I consider it as creative and also collaborative. That one I do a lot on teaching students to be directors on little projects. I'm one of those that think everybody should go get your degree in directing before you take on a full length play. But I know some directors and teachers have opposing views on that. But I will direct, I will teach the student particularly that. And also I have a workshop called Ace Any Theater Audition, but I take them through every kind of audition that they may run into from cattle call to improv to interview, et cetera. So those are my 3 major ones. Plus, I really like to work with teachers on best practices. So I share a lot with facilitating with that. I have a book called Raising the Curtain. It's 4 years of curriculum. It's through perfectionlearning.com. It is $49.95, I believe, now. And I hear it's a really first turnaround once you order that you get it. But then someone said they Googled it on eBay and someone's selling it for $300. So
oh, my gosh.
But I would recommend $49.95 through perfectionlearning.com.
What can a teacher expect to get from a book like that?
You know, anyone, and I've used it through pre-K, through senior citizens, and it really is 4 years of curriculum. It's a beginning level, exploratory, but it also has some advanced ideas, but all of it's project-based. The other one I have, which I published, self-published, is called Break a Leg, and it's a love letter to theater teachers, and that you can get through my website, www.gaijones.com.
And that's G-A-I, everybody.
J-O-N-E-S.com. And it's $16. But it's all the tips and truisms that they didn't articulate when we were in college. Like, you will lose your theater keys at least once a year.
I was gonna ask you, what's the number one tip? Is that it? You're gonna lose your keys?
The next one is learn to drive a big truck.
Okay. That's awesome.
The two imperatives. The third one is you make friends with your custodian and you make friends with the office manager at your school. Okay. Those are things, and the fourth one is your car will be the first one in the parking lot and the last one out, okay?
Why is that? Why do drama teachers, why are they so committed to basically giving over so much of their time? Because that's the number one thing I hear. When I talk to teachers, it's like, it's the time that they give to their students.
You know, to me, I taught English. I love teaching English, but I would much rather spend from 7 a.m. in the morning until 6 p.m. working one-on-one or working with a group of students because I see it coming alive. And it's so instantaneous. And even when it doesn't work, I'm learning something. Now, I made it a practice, though. This is another tip, that I go home at 6 o'clock. I have a family. I went to go see my own daughter's swim meets. I took my kids to things. I involved my own children in things. But they grew up and became a sixth grade teacher. And the other is a principal of an elementary school in which she says, I use theater every day of my life, particularly improvisation with my teachers. But I go home, except on the nights that I had production week, or on a weekend when I might have a comedy sports, which is improvisational theater. But I didn't do Saturday work days. I wanted to have a life. So I really, the other really big tip that I have in my book, first of all, the book will make you laugh. But the second one is take care of yourself. The kids will graduate. Your family will not. Your family and friends and children are the ones that you need to be there for. But understand, those kids at school will understand that you're going to go home to your family. So I think that's really a big tip.
I think that's a great tip. Do you think that the approach to drama and education has changed over time?
I think that we're catching up with the times. It is, and thanks to people like you, Lindsay and Craig, that you're forcing us, and really wonderfully forcing us, to get web-based and get high-tech. Seriously. Because
it's a gentle cajoling, I think.
Oh, the things you offer are incredible. I take them, I print them, I use them. But I'm going to say, because these kids are digital natives when it comes to electronics, and we are not, okay? So I think the more technology that we engage with our art, the more pliable we are and the more reliable we are with students. I think the other thing, I really believe in flipped classroom, and they can look this up, but I also believe in project-based learning. So I think the more we go with the times, and yes, in America, the new standards will be rolling out. We take them as guidelines. We make what we do fit, and we go with that to make sure our students are across the board, Common Core, knowledgeable in everything that we have. So someday when it becomes, rather it becomes STEM, then it will become STEAM because the arts will be involved. But we as teachers will be ready to step up. Now, I'm going to say in California, we don't have a theater and dance credential. And I was just at the Commission of Teacher Credentialing on this week talking about that. Because we are English subsumes theater. You do not have to have a theater credential to teach theater. If you want to be highly qualified, you cannot be in theater or in dance. Dance, you have to have a PE credential. So when I said to my students, you know, that anybody with a PE credential can teach dance, that means any football coach, we love them, any wrestling coach could teach dance, they were horrified. And I said, I taught English, I love English, and I love English teachers, but we need highly qualified teachers in theater in the state of California. We're only one of 15 states that does not have a particular license. We are fighting for it. We're going through it. We will be there. But I believe that that's where we need to be. We need to have our ducks in a row so that we can talk about highly qualified teachers, that we can talk about Common Core, that we can talk about standards, and that we know what we're talking about.
What about support for drama teachers? How is that when you, because you must talk to so many teachers over a year and do you find it is waning? Is it growing? Is there frustration? What's the support like for drama and education now?
Well, I think if you're talking administrators, it depends on the district. I think that one of our jobs as theater educator is to be an advocate for our for our art. And that means we have to educate administrators. We have to educate school board. We have to go every time you get a trophy, whether we love or hate that competition element, that you make an appointment with the school board, you take your students, you go, you're on the agenda and you thank them. So I'm going to say, from local support to state support, that's really a good question, Lindsay. I think that perhaps in some states it's being cut back, but I just tend to be an optimist that the tide will turn and arts will become at the forefront. In California, entertainment is the number two industry, right behind agriculture. Every one of these theme parks, every one of these movies, every one of these live theater are using students that should be trained. So I think support, whether it comes from forming your own booster to parent booster club, which I know some teachers are worried about because they think they'll take over, but basically you set them out to succeed and say that you will be an advocate and you go to their board meetings and you make a report, but you don't run the meeting. Let them do them. Let them know what you need. So that's parent support, student support. I think we also need to engage other teacher support to bring arts into the classroom, volunteer to take theater kids into that classroom, English, history, science, to do a demo lesson in science or whatever, volunteer at the PTA to do something, volunteer at the city library to do some kind of historical retrospective of maybe the historical icons of the city. I mean, get yourself out there. And I keep saying it's not after school, it's curriculum based. You can tie all of these projects into some kind of curriculum and they fit the standards. I think financially, support for the arts is very iffy and it depends where you live. Perhaps private corporations are going to have see the benefit of hiring those students who have theater training or at least the skills of creative thinking and critical thinking. And I think they may come around to support public education and private education, charter system, parochial, doesn't matter. I think we all need to be advocates for who we are and for what our program does.
I love that notion of if you win an award, something, go and make an appointment and make, I think it's all about, because people have this notion of what drama is and it's just silly games. It's like, no, look at this. This is who we are and what we do. And I think you're so right. It's about making it known and linking it to science, linking it to history. And I think those are some really great tips there, Gay.
Thank you. I did have a theater teacher friend who took 1 year off. She hired teachers to come in and direct of professionals. She served on the negotiating committee for salary, and she logged with a log every hour that theater teachers, music teachers, dance teachers, art teachers put in after school, and she was able to get the stipend for co-curricular and extracurricular duty pay increased for those arts. Now, I'm not sure that's going to work for everyone, but it was such a powerful advocacy tool that I look at that and say, you know, if we've got a local advocacy network for your program that's made up of the mayor or the dentist or somebody who had theater in school or student, their child studied theater, and they're your local advocacy network for you. This is beyond the booster club, but they can go into the private sector and into the public and into the Rotary and the Lions Club and wherever to say, this is a wonderful program, and they have the statistics on how taking theater production does help the SAT scores. All of those facts are on the Educational Theater Association website. So if you need any statistics, you go there to be able to arm your local advocacy network and call in a land group that you've set up And they're the ones that will help you.
Awesome. Yes, we are going to put any website that we mention today in this podcast in the show notes so that people will be able to easily access it. So that is Gay Jones and her book, Raising the Curtain. And then the thespian sponsorship fundraising, that's called Defying Gravity, is it not?
It's called Making Magic Defying Gravity because it blends two well-known sources such as Disney and Wicked. Okay. Making Magic Defying Gravity.
Awesome. So that's it. Thank you so much for taking time out of your intensely busy schedule. Are you busier now than when you were teaching, do you think, sometimes?
You know what? Now I can say yes to projects, and I can say, maybe not right now at this time. That's the benefit. There is life after theater education, meaning you can invent yourself and reinvent yourself at least 5 or 6 times. Go on to careers, but theater education will always be there, and to pay it forward and pay it back, I direct at 3 different community theaters. I do workshops around the area. So I've been able to say, am I busier? I'm probably more diversely busy, but I think every theater teacher is busy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think probably so.
Maybe more specifically fulfilled, maybe.
Yes, because I have the freedom to say, oh, that sounds great. Okay. And I go for it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gay.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Keep doing your work. Yay, I love it.
Sure.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Gay. I really appreciate that she took the time to talk with little old me in my little old podcast. It's really great. So before we go, let's do some theater folk news. Don't turn that off. For the past 2 weeks, it has been Resource City in our in-depth blog post, specifically in relation to the importance of arts education. We had 10 arts education surveys with quantifiable research, 8 amazing TED Talk videos with summaries, quotes, and lessons learned outlined for each video. Amazing! I know! So if you are looking for information to share with other teachers, with your students, with your parents, your administration, you gotta go to theaterfolk.com, check out our blog, and use the posts in good health. And finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk. You can find us on the Stitcher app, and you can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. Go over there, search on the word theaterfolk, give us some feedback, put out a review. That would be so lovely. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.